Hello, and welcome to Merkwood Design's Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff, and this is podcast number 12, recorded on February 26th, 2010. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, templates, projects, and more. Just head over to merkwooddesigns.com. The bumper music for today's podcast is a song called Hard Times Come Again No More, written by Stephen Foster, and I'll talk a little bit more about this song in the grab bag segment. After reading a recent comment in iTunes, I wanted to let you know how I decided on my podcast format. I listened to podcasts for a few years, and then I decided to produce my own, and I wanted to use a format of my very favorite radio show, which is also available as a podcast, and the show is an NPR show called The Splendid Table, hosted by Lynn Rosetto Casper. Her excellent food-related podcast is available for free download on iTunes, so I suggest if you like food, or even if you just love to listen to her voice speaking, go over and look for The Splendid Table on iTunes. If my podcast format seems a little commercial, it's because I copied her format, including having segments and bumper music and lead-ins. And, you know, considering that my podcast is really more of a magazine with several very specific topics with breaks, I thought that that format is probably the best way to move from topic to topic. And I hope that that explains why I do things a little differently from other podcasters. That's not to say I'm not going to change the way I do things in the future, but for right now, I like the segmented podcast, and it makes things easier for folks who want to skip to a particular segment rather than have to listen to the entire thing. For example, if they listen to the podcast and say, you know, I want to go back and listen to the recipe segment, all they have to do is open up their MP3 player, figure out the second or the minute marker that I have noted on the blog, and they can skip right to it rather than have to like sift through and skip ahead and figure out where in the heck the recipe segment is. If you follow my blog, you know that I'm going to be offering the process photos of my projects a little differently. A friend of mine, an online friend of mine, came across a really cool software tool called ISU, and I'm not sure if it's ISU or issue. It's spelled ISSUU. And this software tool lets people publish online documents in sort of a magazine format. And I took a look at it and I realized that I can really use this to document my process photos rather than clog up the blog with a huge list of photos. That's not to say I'm not going to have photos on the blog. I certainly will. But I don't want to bore you to tears with photo after photo of my project steps, which can be really tedious if you're not even interested in that particular project. Instead, what I'll do is I'll provide a link to the ISU file, and the cool thing is, ISU is really user-friendly. You can look at it online, or you can download it and print it just like a regular PDF document. I gave it a test spin this past week, including testing it with 4 different browsers and with PC and Mac, and it works great in any browser and on any platform. And I think technology is just amazing and wonderful. So today's projects will be available using the ISU viewer, but remember, you can still download and print the files. If you look at the top of the ISU file, I think that there's a little thing that looks like a disk, and that's what you use to download the file. It's pretty self-explanatory. Let's see what's going on in my life. Well, I made myself another scarf at Christmas time. If you're a listener, you know that I made 9 scarves as Christmas gifts, and I had a couple that I made as practice ones before that. Well, I ended up using my very favorite yarn. It's a merino wool, lime green. My very favorite color is green, and I put a really great novelty yarn as the fringe. It's cute. I have a picture on the blog. You can take a look. The pattern is my favorite seafoam pattern. Super easy. It is a knitting pattern, and if you go to Ravelry and look up, I think it's called Drop Stitch Scarf, or maybe if you just look up seafoam pattern, you'll find it. It's super easy, and it's really cute. It goes really fast. And it's got a really nice, soft look about it, too. The local historical museum called me last week to ask whether I would submit some quilts to their annual quilt show. I hadn't planned on it because I've been so busy, but they talked me into it, so I entered 6 quilts. And if you look at the pictures on the website, I'll have a link to the 6 quilts that I entered. You'll recognize most of them as being ones that I did for the podcast. Last year, I entered 2 of my icon quilts. I haven't talked about my icon quilts yet. That'll be an upcoming podcast, but that's something I developed. I'm kind of known for doing these traditional Byzantine and Russian and Greek Orthodox icons and making them into quilts. The process is fairly straightforward, but it takes a long time to do them. So last year, I submitted 2 of my icon quilts to the quilt show, and I got a really nice commission. An elderly couple went through and saw my icon quilts, called me up and said, I want to commission you to do one of these quilts. And it worked out really well. They were very happy with the finished product, and I was so honored to have been asked to make an icon quilt for them. So there's a link on the blog to the photos of the quilts that I submitted if you're interested in looking at them. The quilt show is called Patches and Patterns, and it will be held from March 2nd through the 31st, 2010, at the Belleville Historical Museum on Main Street in Belleville, Michigan. By the way, in case you didn't know, every March is Quilt Month in the United States. I'm not sure if it is in the world, but March is Quilt Month. Admission is only $2, which I think is quite a bargain. This past week, my sister Kathy had hip replacement surgery, and she was on Facebook, Farmtown, and Skype the day after surgery. She sounded like she had not even had anything done. She sounded better than before because the pain that she was experiencing from her problem hip was gone. The next day, she was a little bit tired because she kind of overdid it the day after surgery, but she's recovering incredibly well. Modern medicine is just amazing. Well, when she was preparing for surgery, she's one of these people who researches everything. She knew everything there was to know about her hospital, her doctor, her anesthesiologist. She could probably tell you their grandchildren's names. But one of the things that she learned was that she should have an apron. Somebody suggested that she have an apron with lots of pockets that she could fill up with things that she normally would have to get up and go find, like the clicker for the TV or her cell phone or a notebook or whatever. So my sister Pat and I made aprons for her. I designed the basic pattern, and I made my first apron and shipped it off to my sister Kathy, and I sent the pattern instructions to my sister Pat, who just went all out. My sister Pat is a crazy woman, I swear. She made these incredible paper-pieced patches and out of beautiful batik fabrics, and she used those paper-pieced blocks to make the pockets on the apron. And I'm not going to show you the picture of my sister Pat's apron yet, because in an upcoming podcast, I will offer the apron pattern, and I will also share the photos of her apron. It's so beautiful. You won't even believe how pretty it is. It's almost, you know, too nice to wear just as an apron. But I know my sister Kathy is going to be so thrilled when she receives it. But there is a picture of my apron on the blog if you would like to take a look at that. Podcast listener Debbie Sicardi's quilt, Morning Has Broken, was one of only 50 competition quilts accepted into Quilt Fest New Jersey, number 6. Her beautiful quilt is also featured in the show and tell section of the latest NQA magazine, Quilters Quarterly. And I hope it's okay with Debbie, I think it probably is, that I posted a photo of her quilt on the blog. Actually, she's standing in front of her quilt. It's just too beautiful not to share. So Debbie, congratulations. I can't wait to hear how it does in the competition. I think it's so amazing. People, I mean, I don't really know Debbie, but I know her because of the podcast. And so it's just kind of cool to be rubbing elbows, so to speak, with greatness. I certainly could never hope to have a quilt of mine entered in any kind of competition. So it's a beautiful quilt. And I hope you take a chance to look at the blog and look at Debbie's quilt. Stay tuned for the Fiber Arts segment. Today's topic is how to make a handy zippered wristlet purse. Welcome to the Fiber Arts segment. And before I continue, I realize I forgot to mention that number 11 in the Alice in Wonderland continuing Redwork series is Queen Alice. There is going to be one more in this series, and then I have to kind of figure out where I'm going after that to present something every podcast for you. So it's Queen Alice in the Alice in Wonderland Redwork series. So, the fiber art segment, we're going today to be talking about how to make a handy zippered wristlet purse, which is just the right size to hold a cell phone or other essentials. I really like this little purse. It's lined. The fabric I used is actually Home Deck fabric. I got it at Joann's, and it's 100% cotton. Really pretty print, very colorful, and the lining is the coordinating stripe, so it's really kind of nice looking. And if you look actually at the blog, you'll notice that it's the same fabric I made my sister Kathy's apron out of. It's a great heavyish weight. I think the fabric is actually called cotton duck, so it's pretty sturdy. You can make this out of any kind of fabric. As a matter of fact, it would be really pretty out of something like a brocade if you wanted to make an evening bag, or maybe you could do some beading on it. Or if you made it out of like a really brightly colored fabric, you could use it as something to hold crayons for your children. It's not a beginner tutorial. If you've never sewn a zipper, it could be a little bit tricky, but I do have, in the new viewer, you can download and look at the series of photos, but I do have pretty clear photos of how you insert the zipper. And other than that, it is straight seams and a couple of little tricky things to attach the handles and the little tab on the other side. I used some rectangular D-rings. They're called D-rings, but in this particular case, they're rectangular because you attach it to the tab on one side, and on the other side of the flat side, you have your little wristlet or your little, the little strap that hooks around your wrist, which is why this is called a wristlet. Now, on the other side, the tab is hooked to a D-ring that has a toggle attached. I think you can find these at Joann's, Michael's, Hobby Lobby, although I'll be honest and say that I bought a whole lot of them on eBay some time ago because I knew I was going to be making some wristlet purses, and I really thought they were handy. You can hook it a ring of keys to it, and that's why I put that on there. As I said, it's not really a beginner sewing project because of the zipper, but even if you've never inserted a zipper, I hope you give it a try because it's just straight seams. It's not like you have to worry about making, a placket in jeans or something like that where you have to worry if it's perfect. And as a matter of fact, if the zipper shows, it's all the better because if you look at the one that I made, I used a really brightly colored zipper. I used lime green zipper because I wanted it to kind of be part of the design of the purse. So my purse is, the fabric, it's got leaves and flowers and so forth, and some of the colors are lime green. And then I have the lime green zipper, which I think just kind of looks really great. Now, I'm not going to go through all of the photos on the podcast because I think you can probably go. The cool thing about the new viewer that I'm using is I can add a lot more text to go with each photo. But at the very end, after I was almost done with the purse, I realized I really wanted to put a label in it. And so what I did, I explained it a little bit on the process photo sheet. I went into one of my software programs. Actually, I just did it in PowerPoint because I found PowerPoint is really easy to use. And I used my Mirkwood Designs font, which is a font that I bought several years ago. I really like the way it looks. And I just typed out Mirkwood Designs, and then I put mirkwooddesigns.com underneath it, the website, so that it would look like a little label that you would sew into your garment. Or in this case, what I did was I printed it on a piece of fabric that I had ironed to freezer paper, and I ran it right through my color printer. You're probably pretty familiar with that process, but it's a really great way to print something. Now, I did not, since I don't plan to wash this wristlet purse, I did not pre-treat the fabric. Normally, if I think that, say, a quilt label is possibly the quilt will be washed, I pre-treat the fabric with Bubblejet 2000, which is a great product that makes the ink from the inkjet printer fairly stable and won't wash out. After a lot of washings, it kind of does tend to wash out a little bit. But as I said, in this case, I didn't pre-treat it. And so I ironed the piece of fabric to freezer paper, and I cut the whole thing to fit my printer, ran it through the printer, and I used I went into the settings and I made the color very saturated so it would really saturate the fabric. And I printed a whole lot of them. So I have a whole sheet that says Mirkwood Designs. And then I cut it out. I cut one of the little label pieces out and I ironed it to a piece of Steamaseam 2. It's a fusible web and it's the two-sided fusible web. And then I ironed it to the inside pocket of my little purse. And it looks really great. It kind of gives it just that finishing touch. So if you're thinking about making the wristlet purse before you get as far as I did in the project, think about maybe making your own labels. Or perhaps you even have some labels that say made by grandma or made by your mother or whatever. And sew it on the inside and it'll just remind the person anytime they open up their little wristlet purse and they look in there and they'll see that it was made with love by you for them. As usual, the project sheet and the photo series are available on the blog in the new project viewer format, or you can just go to mirkwooddesigns.com/projects and you can just download the project sheet right from there. Stay tuned for the paper art segment. Today, we are playing with dolls. Welcome back. In today's paper art segment, we are playing with dolls. Paper dolls, that is. This past week, two different Mirkwood Designs fans emailed photos of projects that they had made, and they were paper dolls using a template I had designed at least 10 years ago. I hadn't decided on a paper project for this podcast yet, so I took that as a sign. And this is really a fun project. The really interesting thing is, as I progressed with each doll, she began to take on a persona. The doll above, or the doll on the blog, the first doll, is named Matilda, Le Mademoiselle avec des tatouages, accompanied by her faithful capuchin monkey, Shushu. Hey, everybody needs a backstory, right? I used some of my son's good origami washi paper, and when I glued it to the body of the doll, it really reminded me of tattoos. So, Matilda is the tattooed lady who travels with the circus. This is one of those projects for which you can let your imagination run wild. Go through your stash of cool craft supplies and just get inspired. Take a good look at the two paper dolls in the gallery for further inspiration. You'll find instructions on the blog, but basically what you'll need is a piece of 8.5 by 11 sturdy cardstock. Now, you want to use a sturdier cardstock for this rather than a thin one because you want your paper doll to be fairly sturdy. You're going to be punching holes in her, and if you just use a really thin cardstock, it could possibly tear. But if you don't have really thick cardstock, you could laminate the back of your doll, or maybe use two sheets glued together. You want it to be a little bit sturdier than, say, just a normal greeting card cardstock. You'll also need a small hole punch, which you probably have, or you can also use a needle to punch a hole where you're going to be putting the brads. And you will need brads, which are little metal round things with little, I don't know what you call them, little arms that stick out. And then you put it through the hole and fold the arms out. And what it does is it not only holds the two pieces of cardstock together, but it allows you to move them so your arms and legs and your head, in this instance, can move. Now, if you don't have brads, you can actually sew two beads, one to the front and one to the back with a piece of thread, and that could act as a hinge or maybe two little buttons. Or if you really don't care if your arms and legs move, you can always tape or glue them together. And then what you need are every kind of imaginable crafty item, sequins and paints and glitter and ribbon, everything you can think of to dress your doll or to decorate your doll. Now, the first one I did, she is wearing the tattooed body, which is origami paper. I glued to the entire body. I used Aileen's tacky glue to glue the paper to the body of the doll. To make it easy, I glued it to the wrong side. I printed the doll onto cardstock, and then I glued the paper to the wrong side. So when it came time to cut it out, I could still see the shapes that I needed to cut out. And then I dressed her up using tissue paper, couldn't think of the word. I used tissue paper as the skirt and a little piece of tulle over the top. And then her hair, I had a lot of fun doing. It's just a variety of fibers all cut up. And then in looking through all of my cool stuff that I have sitting around, I saw these plastic monkeys that I had. I think I have monkeys and elephants. And I think they're originally designed to, say, hang on the edge of a drink glass, a mixed drink. I'm not quite sure why, but that sticks in my mind that that's what they were originally designed for. But I have a whole bunch of them because I think they're really cute and they're very colorful. So I just attached the little monkey to a chain and I attached the chain to the doll's hand. Hence, she is a circus performer who walks around with a monkey on a leash. The other doll that I did is called Mad Margaret. And the reason I call her that is because she's wearing these big black boots. They're not really that big, but in my mind, she has these big black boots on and she's just dressed in a very colorful outfit with sequins and all. And Mad Margaret was a character I played in a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta a long time ago, I think probably about 18 years ago. And I wore my husband's army boots to play this character, at least in the first act, I wore army boots. And she has to do a dance in these huge, my husband wears a size 12 boot, and I have a size 5 foot. So I had these enormous army boots on, and I had to sing and dance in these crazy boots. So this, as I was making this particular paper doll, she just reminded me of my character, Mad Margaret. So that's why her name is Mad Margaret. I think you'll have a really good time making this particular project. And this is one of those projects that you can have your kids help to decorate. You might also want to have these as party favors. Say if you have a little girl who's having a birthday party or a little tea party or whatever, have these as party favors and you can have the guests decorate them and put them together and they would have a really nice thing that is cute and that they made at the party as one of your activities. Now, I've mentioned it a lot recently, but of all of the projects that I've ever offered on the podcast, I would love to see your version of this particular project. I would love to see what is inside of your mind when you come up with your own paper doll. So I challenge everybody listening to please make a paper doll and to take a picture or scan it and send it to me. I would love to see all the dolls that are out there. I know that there are a lot just waiting to be born. And let me know the name of your doll and also give it a bit of a backstory. I'd like to know why she is wearing her outfit or something interesting about her life. I think this would be a kind of a fun project. So give it a try, and I want to see those pictures. Up next is the recipe segment, and today we are making the ultimate comfort food, at least in my opinion, chicken pot pie. Welcome to the recipe segment. Today we are making my favorite chicken pot pie. This was one of those weeks where I actually had another recipe segment planned, but we got a snowstorm and I fell on the ice and I pulled my muscles and I hit my head and then our mailbox was knocked down twice, down into a ditch, and I just needed some comfort food. So I looked at what I had in the fridge and in the freezer, and I realized I had all of the makings to make chicken pot pie, which to me is a wonderful, heartwarming, stomach-warming comfort food. Now, chicken pot pie is really only chicken stew inside of some sort of a crust. It's pretty easy to make. You need, obviously, chicken, and you need some vegetables, and you need something to use, chicken stock to make the broth that you're going to add flour to make it so that it's a gravy. And Elton Brown uses the term refrigerator Velcro. If you've got vegetables in your bin that maybe are left over from your dinner last night, say green beans or peas or corn, throw that in. Again, you're making a stew, which is simply a mixture of things. You need the meat for your base, and you need some sort of a gravy to hold it all together. So let your imagination run wild, be a little creative with what you put in this. I provide instructions for the way I happen to make it because, gee, I was taking pictures while I was making it and I wrote it down. to share with you, but don't feel bound by what I tell you to do. Now, the way I made it was I took chicken thighs, which it's my favorite cut of meat. They're very juicy, flavorful. I used to like the breast of the chicken more, but as I've gotten older, I tend to think it's a little dry. So I use chicken thighs whenever I can. I like mine with the skin on and with the bone in because I think that those impart a lot more flavor and a lot more moisture into the meat. And what I did was I roasted them in the oven to cook them through. And I also, at the same time, roasted potatoes and carrots. So the vegetables had that extra flavor of roasting in the oven, which I think that makes them gives them a deeper flavor. And then meanwhile, I sauteed onions and celery on the stovetop in butter. And when the chicken and the potatoes and carrots were done, I set those aside to cool a little bit because I had to chop them up and I didn't want to be chopping them when they were quite so hot. But to the carrots and the celery, I added a little bit of flour because the flour acts as a thickener to help make the gravy. And then I added chicken stock. And that made a really nice gravy. And then when I cut up the carrots and the potatoes and the chicken and added it in there, it just made this beautiful chicken stew. And I added, obviously, some herbs and salt and pepper, things like that to taste. And I have that all in the recipe. And it was good enough to eat as chicken stew. But I really wanted the concept of the chicken pot pie. So I make my mom's pie dough in large batches, and I freeze it in individual little balls, and each ball is the size to make one single crust pie. So I pulled out a couple of the balls of pie dough, and I decided to make four individual ramekins that they're not really individual. My husband and I shared one of them, and it's 24-ounce size ramekin. It sort of looks like a small souffle dish. And although you could use a large souffle dish or a deep dish pie dish to make the chicken pot pie, but I used four individual ones, and I put the crust on the inside of the dish, and I filled it with what was essentially chicken stew, and then I cut a round circle of the pie dough and put it on top. Now, you need to make sure when you're doing this that you cut little vent holes in the top of the crust, because if not, you're going to end up with your pie probably exploding all over the inside of your oven, making a big mess. And then what I did at the very end was I made an egg wash by breaking an egg in a bowl and whisking it, and then taking a brush and brushing it on the top of the crust, on the top of the pie. And I also sprinkled a little bit of kosher salt on the top. It gives it a nice sparkle, a nice crunch, and I have to admit, I really like salt. So what I did then was I set them all on a large restaurant metal pan, and I put them in the oven that way, because if you don't do that, it could possibly bubble over, and you don't want that all over the bottom of your oven. It makes a big mess, and it kind of smokes and everything. So the metal tray, or you could use a cookie sheet, will help to collect any of the drippings. You're going to bake it in the oven only until your pie crust is done, which I believe ended up being about 35 minutes. But you kind of just want to keep an eye on it to make sure that the top of the crust is nice and golden brown. I hope you give this recipe a try, because it's a great way to use up those leftover vegetables and leftover chicken from last night's dinner. Up next is the grab bag, and today we're just going to talk about this and that, and I'm also going to talk about the song Hard Times Come Again No More, and why I chose it for this podcast. Welcome to the grab bag. For those of you who are regular listeners, you might notice a couple things about this podcast. Number one, it's shorter than usual, but hey, I figure February is a short month. You're going to get a short podcast. Number two, it's also published a couple days earlier than I usually publish podcasts. You know, I usually publish on the 15th and the last of the month. This one is early because my son, Teddy, is coming home for spring break. Yay! Teddy has been so stressed out these past few weeks, not only because of his heavy course load, but also because his schedule is overloaded with fraternity and glee club activities. He sings bass with the University of Michigan Men's Glee Club, and they're celebrating their 150th anniversary this year. As a result, they've been touring and they're taking part in competitions, which means Teddy's been on the road as well as taking all of his full load of classes. And apparently, contrary to rumors, organic chemistry and chemical engineering aren't easy classes. I'm just joking about that. Obviously, that's a pretty heavy course load. And Teddy, by the way, is an all-A student at one of the hardest universities in the country. So how he does it, I will never understand. But he is a hard worker and a dedicated student, but he also really enjoys singing in the Glee Club. So I decided to record a few days early so I'd be able to spend time with Teddy. And his big request is that we don't plan anything the week he's home. He just wants quiet family time with his old mom and dad and with his three cats. So I bought a jigsaw puzzle of Frank Lloyd Wright's famous stained glass window called Saguaro. And we'll sit around doing that while watching movies or whatever he wants to do. I think that's pretty low stress activity. There is a picture of the jigsaw puzzle on the blog if you want to take a look at it. I love to see this window in person. I'm a big fan of stained glass windows in general, and in particular, obviously, the windows of Lewis Comfort Tiffany, LaForge, and Frank Lloyd Wright. I actually made a copy of one of Frank Lloyd Wright's windows, well, my rendition, I should say, of one of Frank Lloyd Wright's windows, and it sits in one of the windows in our house. It's a big, huge window that I did, and it took forever, and it still amazes me that it's still standing, because I don't know if I did it right, but it looks good. That's all that matters. I've put a link to a YouTube video of the University of Michigan Men's Glee Club on the blog, if you're interested. They're singing a song called Sound Off, which was written by the conductor, Dr. Paul Rarden, and it's a really funny song. They don't give the introduction, which is a real pity on the YouTube video, but when he introduced the song, he said he wrote this song thinking, what if a drill sergeant, a member of British Parliament, and a rap singer, I think, I can't remember what the third person was, what if they met each other? The song is kind of wacky and unusual, and you can see my son in it, but I'm not going to tell you where to look for him. Just basically, just enjoy it for what it is. It's really quite entertaining. Okay, so on to a more somber note. It seems that recently so many of my friends and acquaintances and family members are going through some really hard times. You know, they say bad things happen in threes. Well, for some reason, lately, it seems they're happening by the dozen. And I guess that's why this particular song, Hard Times Come Again No More, has been sticking in my head. The song was written in 1854 by American composer Stephen Foster. I'm sure you're familiar with his songs. He wrote I Dream of Jeannie. He wrote Oh, Susanna, Camptown Races. And you might have heard this particular song, Hard Times Come Again No More, if you watched the concert Hope for Haiti after the horrible earthquake recently. It was sung by Mary J. Blige, and she did just a really beautiful rendition of the song. I've known this song since I was really little. We had a piano bench that was filled with all these music books, and in there was a gray songbook that had a lot of American folk songs, and this particular song was in it. And since the song is in the public domain, I decided to record a version for you to listen to, and I've also put the lyrics on the blog. It's very, very touching. It was very popular, both sung by the North and the South during the American Civil War. Again, I dedicate this song to all of my friends and family and acquaintances who are just going through some really tough times right now. And let me tell you, stay safe, people. Hold those whom you love close to your heart. Life is so fragile.
Pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay, there are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. There's a pale, drooping maiden who toils her life away with a worn heart whose better days are o'er. Though her voice would be merry, 'tis sighing at the day. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis a sigh that is wafted across the troubled wave. 'Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. 'Tis a dirge that is murmured around the lonely grave. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more.
Thanks, everyone, for listening and for your emails and especially comments I've received on the blog and on iTunes. I do appreciate the constructive criticism, and I'm always trying to improve. If you'd like me to talk about something in particular or would like me to change the way I do things, I'm open to suggestions because I'm still pretty new at this and I'm learning as I go. If you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right-hand column there are links to my projects, recipes, and podcasts pages, plus a link to the gallery. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs, Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race, it's an adventure.